One night when Becky was little and I was reading her a bedtime story, which in this case happened to be The Runaway Bunny by Margaret Wise Brown, I suddenly began seeing double. That is, I found myself reading not only a children's story, but also a parable with meaning for adults. The author, who also wrote, of course, that other children's classic, Goodnight Moon, doesn't tell us why the little bunny wants to run away. And we can only guess what has provoked anger and annoyance, what incident has left the bunny with that feeling of just wanting to escape. And so a duet between mother and child begins, a duet that has all the sounds of a duel, a listing of challenges and responses.
Always responses.
I will run away.
Well, if you run away, I will run after you, for you are my little bunny.
If you run after me, I will become a fish in a trout stream, and I will swim away from you.
Has anyone ever run away from you? I'm going to guess the answer is yes. That at some time in your life, someone said to you they were leaving, that they were turning their back and ending the relationship. They've had a change of heart or a change of habit. And what might you have said to such devastating news?
So many choices, so many options. Go to hell. Get lost. I don't care. I don't need you. Is this what you might have said to this kind of outburst, this other person's anger, this leaving, their unwanted declaration of non-dependence?
If you become a fish in a trout stream, I will become a fisherwoman, and I will fish for you.
Sometimes we don't want to let go. And isn't that okay? It may be unseemly or embarrassing to hold on, to cling.
But what about fishing for the castaway, the runaway, the almost out of sight swimmers in our lives? If you want them back, why not try? Surely sometimes it is right to hold on.
If you become a fisherwoman, then I will become a rock on the mountain high above you.
People who are running away from us can do that, you know. They can become rock-like, unyielding, unmoving. Maybe they're not even running. They're just distant or cold or remote. How do you break through? How do you melt the iceberg or shatter the granite? What if they can't listen? What if they don't know how to hear? If you reach out but can't touch the other because of their coldness, their remoteness, what do you do? And what about the times when you are the one doing the running?
Some of you may have seen the post-World War II 1946 film, The Best Years of Our Lives. Some of you may even remember it. It is well worth seeking out. Just to recap, the movie won 4 Academy Awards: Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Supporting Actor. The film follows 3 servicemen who don't know each other, but who are each returning to the same small town with the Second World War over. Harold Russell, who won the Best Supporting Actor Award, plays a man named Homer, who is a double amputee, having lost both his hands in a war injury. But here's what's really interesting. Harold Russell isn't really acting when he plays Homer. In his real life, he too is a sailor home from the sea, and he also lost both his hands in the war.
Both Russell and his movie screen character have hooks, which are used very skillfully. In the film, Homer tells some friends he has made on the flight back home,
"I can dial a telephone, I can drive a car, I can even put nickels in the jukebox," which is, for those of a more recent generation, the equivalent of saying, "I can still play songs on my iPod."
The other 2 returning servicemen sense that in spite of these accomplishments, Homer is not completely at ease. And so they ask him if everything is back home is okay. "I've got a girl," Homer replies.
Does she know about your hands?
Sure, Homer says. Everyone knows about my war wounds.
But what Homer doesn't say is that no one knows what we as viewers are aware of, and that is what his hooks look like.
Homer's hooks are bright, metallic, functional, cold. Later, when the men have left the airport and are in a cab, Homer is dropped off at his home. His mom and dad run out to greet him, and from next door comes Homer's high school sweetheart.
Wilma embraces Homer while he stands there cold, unwavering, a rock.
The cab pulls away, and the young bombardier remarks to the older Army sergeant,
"You've got to hand it to the Navy. They sure trained that kid to use his hooks."
And the sergeant replies, "Yeah, but they couldn't train him to put his arms around his girl, to stroke her hair."
We're all trained, aren't we? We learn that there are two pints in a quart, that a preposition is not a good thing to end a sentence with. We can type on computers, we can work on our cars, we can read the latest bestseller, or we can study the Bible. But do we really know how to put our arms around someone else, especially if, like Homer, we are hurting and vulnerable?
Do we know how to climb the mountain when someone else is a rock above us? Who can train us? Who can teach us? How to love? How to care? Is it Islam or Christianity, God, Goddess, or the graduate school?
If you become a mountain climber, said the little bunny, I will be a crocus in a hidden garden.
If you become a crocus in a hidden garden, said the bunny's mother, I will be a gardener, and I will find you.
Still, as the bunny has indicated, the garden may be hidden, and the crocus may have secrets. Too many drinks, too many pills, too much hurt built up from a past that may include too many mistakes. So how do you become an effective gardener who can help heal those in our lives who are on the run? Those who may keep their innermost feelings hidden. What do you say, and how can you help?
Are you gentle, or do you plunge into the garden, pulling up weeds as you go? What kind of green thumb do you need, and how hard do you try?
Like the question of who can teach us to love, this one's not easy. The gardens that hide other people can be more like jungles, filled with dependency and pain and bad choices and good tries gone awry. When you enter these hidden places of another's soul, you can be very much like an explorer without compass or map, trusting only in intuition and luck.
We're not telling you that you shouldn't go in. We're just saying, be careful. Gardens can be dark, and there are places where the vegetation is so dense it hasn't seen the sun for years. Tread carefully. It's an easy place in which to get lost.
If you are a gardener and find me, said the little bunny, I will be a bird and fly away from you.
And while the bunny is determined to be in control, it is good to remember that not all flying is voluntary. People leave us due to illness, and often death carries them away for the final time. The hospital room at the end of the hall, an accident no one could foresee.
People we care about slip away from us in anger and denial, with regret or feelings of helplessness, and we let them go, for sometimes there is nothing else we can do.
If you become a bird and fly away from me, the bunny's mother says, I will be a tree that you come home to.
It's complicated then, this running away and running after. And it's not just young kids running away, is it? Our spouses, lovers, good friends can all run away.
In the end, the little bunny never really runs away. His mother is tenacious, and she won't let go. And so we have to ask, Is her love stifling and choking, or is she instead a good mother, devoted and loving? The mother of the runaway bunny challenges us to ask ourselves, when is it good and sensible to let go, and when is it wise and loving to pursue?
The story over, I turn out the light, and Becky goes into her mother's arms. The house is quiet, and our little family of four is together, at least for now. But my head is filled with images of leave-taking, ruptures, and hemorrhages of love. As a minister, I have been the architect of numerous children's naming ceremonies and happy weddings, and some of them may have even been for your family. But I also preside at memorial services and counsel couples on the way to divorce. Some of those people who died may have been the people you love and continue to love. One of those divorced people may be you. And because Vicki and I have both counseled and supported people in this church as they have transitioned through life's hurts, we know all about letting go.
Yet because there is so much in this world that conspires with death and abandonment, with running away and acting less than kind, I think it's fair to say that both Mark and I are rooting for the mother bunny, that together we sing the hymn of stubborn love and compassion and preach it whenever we can. At a later point in the best years of our lives, Wilma goes to see Homer. She asks him what he wants their relationship to look like now that he has returned from the horrors of war. And with all good intentions, Homer replies,
I want you to be free, Wilma, to live your life. You don't know what it would be like to live with this every day, every night.
And in an act designed to push her further away, Homer takes Wilma up to his bedroom where he proceeds to take his harness off so he can show her the stubs which were once arms, the empty place where hands once existed. This is when I know I'm helpless, he tells her, when my hands are down there on the bed. I can't smoke a cigarette or read a book. If that door should blow shut, I can't open it. I'm as dependent as a baby. So now you know, Wilma. And my guess is you don't know what to say. It's okay. Go on home, Wilma. Go away. We've all run away. We've all pushed other people out the door. Even as we run from parts of ourselves that we don't know what to do with. And too often, like the little bunny, we are hurting. We're angry and afraid.
But sometimes the stories that we are caught up in just won't end, despite what we try to do.
I do know what to say, Homer. I love you. And with that, Wilma picks up Homer's hooks, places them gently on a chair, and kisses him. And this time, Homer wraps whatever he has left of his arms around her. And when he does, he surrenders his love to her and accepts the love she is giving to him.
Sometimes we can learn to love gently and to love firmly and tenderly and steadfastly.
Call it grace, call it Holy Spirit, goddess or God. Call it human potential. Call it mom or dad or son or daughter. Grandma or grandpa or friend or neighbor or partner. Call it by a thousand names. It will still blow into our lives like an ocean breeze or capture our hearts like the morning light on a mountain filled with the green of spring.
And it can be precisely when we feel parched or dried out or full of darkness that the wind blows and the dawning comes. And on this, our last Mother's Day with all of you, I can hear it singing even now, that song of stubborn love, which is ours to give and ours to receive.
Here, the bunny's mother said, have a carrot.